You're listening to Radiola.
And now the big test. Can the magic jukebox wake up 75-year-old Mr. Bluster, the soundest sleeper in the world?
Oh, and you know, Buffalo Bob, it takes a dime to play a Bluster record, and I don't have one.
Hey, I don't either, Howdy. I'll go next door and borrow one.
All right, good. And meantime, I've used my last nickel to play the other side of my Howdy Doody record. Just for fun. It's the Toy Piano Song.
Tinkle, 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 tinkle goes the toy piano song. Tinkle, 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 everybody knows the toy piano song. There's high notes and low notes and fast notes and slow notes. Oh, tinkle, 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 that's the toy piano song. I can sprinkle, sprinkle music with the tinkle, tinkle music of the toy piano song. There's old notes and new notes and sweet notes and blue notes. Oh, tinkle, 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 that's the toy piano song. Stars begin to twinkle, twinkle when they hear the tinkle, tinkle of the toy piano song. There's black notes and white notes and wrong notes. Oh, oh, tinkle, 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 that's the toy piano song. Oh, you know, kids, I like to play my toy piano. Wonder how many of you kids play piano. Well, don't forget to practice. There's black notes and white notes and wrong notes. Oh, boy. Oh, tinkle, 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 tinkle. That's the toy piano song. Hey, wonderful, Howdy.
Oh, thanks, Buffalo Bob. Did you find a dime?
Yes, I did. So now we're ready for the Bluster test. Oh, and boy, Howdy, listen to him snore.
Okay, then, put in the dime, Buffalo Bob.
And push the button for Mr. Buster's song, Polly Wally Doodle.
Oh, I went down south for to see my Sal, sing Polly Wally Doodle all the day. My Sally am a spunky gal, sing Polly Wally Doodle, oh, Polly Wally Doodle, oh, Polly Wally Doodle, oh.
Oh, listen, gang, the needle's stuck. A broken record. Oh, stop the jukebox, pull out the plug.
All right, Howdy, I'll get it.
No, 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 leave the plug in. I'll fix it with my hammer.
Hey, no, no, Dilly, don't use the hammer. The jukebox, it might explode.
Whee!
Oh, no, don't.
Polly Wally Doodle all day.
There!
Oh, hooray, the record stopped.
Well, congratulations, Dilly. Oh, hey, but look, gang. Look, the jukebox is smoking. Stand back, everybody. Stand back.
Everybody, look out, Doc!
There goes the jukebox.
Oh, look at the peaches flying!
Something landed.
Why, it's the musical alarm clock.
Good morning, everybody.
Well, the clock's been inside the jukebox all the time.
Sure, I could have told you that.
Dilly-dally. Oh, and Buffalo Bob's been looking for it all day.
Oh, that's too bad. You see, yesterday I was using the clock, well, to see how long the jukebox played for one nickel.
And?
Well, the clock slipped out of my hands.
And fell into the jukebox.
Yeah.
Oh, Dilly.
I said good morning, everybody.
Dilly, now my jukebox is ruined.
Yeah, but what's the difference? We all ran out of nickels anyway.
Yeah, that's true, and we do have the alarm clock back, so I guess it hasn't been too bad a day.
Ooh, I said good morning, everybody.
Mr. Bluster, hey, you woke up. Only it's good afternoon now.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Time for my afternoon nap.
No, Phineas. It's howdy doody time. Time for our circus show on television. Oh, gang, come on now. Don't let Mr. Buster fall asleep again. Let's play something to keep him awake. Come on, everybody get an instrument. Let's go, gang. That's the way. Everybody got an instrument? Okay, let's go. All the kids like to look at the Howdy Doody Circus Show. If you like lots of laughs, it's the very bestest show I know. Lions, tigers do their stunts. Monkeys, horses, elephants. Everything you like so well. And of course, Clarabelle. All the kids run to look at the Howdy Doody Circus Show. Everyone knows there's fun at the Howdy Doody Circus Show. There's a treat to see on your TV, cause Howdy Doody time is time to go. And join the kids at the Howdy Doody Circus Show. Oh, Mr. Bluster, oh.
What? And join the kids at the Howdy Doody Circus Show.
You're listening to a special program I'm doing here with Walt Mitchell at his home in Oriskany, New York. Walt's a friend of mine, and Walt has, you know, an amazing record collection. Has been collecting, well, 50 years, which is, you know, longer than I've been on the planet. But I have to say, I appreciate Walt being here today and sharing his great records, his wonderful stories about those records. This is Radiola, as I say. I'm Andy Senior, and Walt. So we just finished hearing Bob Smith and Howdy Doody. That was a great record. That was a great set you had there.
Yes, they didn't make any LPs when the show was on the air. So since these were all 78 RPM performances, they made so many of these two record sets that you can listen to them for 2 hours without running out of them. And now,
well, that's amazing. So you probably have all of them by now.
In one form or another, I still need the 78 RPM set of Howdy Doody's Crystal Ball. When I get that, then I'll have everything that was issued on 78.
That's probably the most rare.
Pardon?
That's probably the most rare set.
Could be. Yeah, I think you could say that.
If you don't have it, it must be rare.
Good point. I did get a copy of it once, but it arrived with the records both badly cracked. So now I'm still in the market for the 78 of it. But I do have it on 45, so it's not like I don't have the material itself. So on with the show here.
Yes.
Now we hear my favorite pioneer recording artist, Billy Murray. Irish-American tenor supreme. Not only could he sing well, but he had the kind of personality that came across well in that venue where you couldn't actually see him. He was also terrific at acting, and he could do any dialect on records that you handed to him. He could sing grand opera if he'd wanted to, but he didn't want to. He preferred singing fun stuff like this record. This was his first big-selling record, recorded in this instance on April 27th, 1906, and it's the pseudo-Western cowboy song out of Tin Pan Alley, Cheyenne.
Yeehaw!
Way out in old Wyoming long ago, where coyotes lurk while night winds howl and blow, a cowboy's lusty voice rang out hello, and echoes through the the valley down below. Then came back a maiden dancer sweet and clear. Cowboy tossed his hat up in the air. Said he, I've come to take you right away from here. Cheyenne, they say, is miles away, but they've a preacher there. Then she just drooped her eye. She was so very shy, so shy, oh my. And then he made reply, oh, oh, oh. Cheyenne, Cheyenne, hop on my pony. There's room here for two, dear, but after the ceremony, we'll both ride back home, dear, as one on my pony from old Cheyenne. They rode that night and nearly half the day. Cheyenne was 67 miles away. But when at last they galloped up the street, the cowboy's pride was really hard to beat. On his arm his future bride a-carrying, but beneath the little church's dome, said she, I feel like turning back, not marrying. His face got red and then he said, you will or you'll walk home. If you ride back today, you'll honor and obey. I will, she cried, then he was heard to say, oh, 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 Cheyenne, Cheyenne, hop on my pony. There's room here for two, dear, but after the ceremony, we'll both ride back home, dear, as one on my pony from old Cheyenne.
Well, the cowboy will have his way in those days.
Yes, he may have made her walk. That's true. It's terrible.
That was, of course, Billy Murray on a Victor record from 1906.
And I love how his voice sounds so good on an acoustic recording. It just cuts right through that 1906 wax. You know, the recording wasn't terrific in 1906. But it sounds so good.
That was the thing about acoustic recording. If you had a voice that recorded well in those days, you could make a good living just going from company to company, day after day and year after year. And in those largely non-exclusive contract days, that's what many recording artists did. In Billy's case, although he was exclusive a couple of times, during his 41-year career on records, 1903 to 1943, because much of it was freelance, it's estimated that Billy cut somewhere between 8 and 10,000 tracks.
That's amazing. All these guys did. Irving Kaufman, Henry Burr, Arthur Fields, all made huge numbers of records.
True.
And I think you have most of them.
As
far as I know, you do. I've got the rest of them.
In addition to Billy recording solo, he also recorded duets, trios, and he sang with the Hayden Quartet and the American Quartet. The American Quartet was organized specifically for Billy to sing with by Victor when he signed a dual contract with Victor and Edison to be exclusive to those two companies.
So he had him going vertically and laterally at that time.
Exactly.
Yes. And those who know records will know of which I speak.
Well, now we have the Peerless Quartet.
Without Billy Murray.
This was the group which had originally been on early Columbia records as the Columbia Quartet. It was organized by Frank C. Stanley, who was the bass singer of the group. Stanley died in December of 1910, and the second tenor, Henry Burr, took over management of the group. And the Peerless Quartet normally sang serious things, like when the corn is waving, any deer, and serious love songs, ballads, and so forth. Well, this could almost be considered a ballad, but not at this tempo.
It's not a ballad. It is not a... Believe me, I know this song. It's not a ballad.
Well, I guess you could say it wasn't really a ballad, but it is a sentimental song, certainly. It's the great song of George Gershwin and Irving Caesar called Swanee. This record was made for Victor on July 13th, 1920.
And here we go.
Quartet with lead singer Henry Burr clearly in evidence, especially on his solo lines.
How I Love You, How I Love You.
Incidentally,
I heard that too, yeah.
Incidentally, Jim Walsh, who wrote the series Favorite Pioneer Recording Artists for Hobbies Magazine, couldn't understand the timing of the release of this record. Victor recorded the song 6 months after Jolson recorded the Columbia record of it.
Amazing.
Amazing indeed, but they put it out and it still sold well anyway.
Of course it did.
Because of the strength of the song and the popularity of the Fearless Quartet. Now we move into a later era, later than what we've been doing anyway.
Yeah, this gets into the big band era, actually. A slight, just the first part of it, yeah. That's what you've got here, yes.
Well, the next record we have... why don't we not reveal the name of the singer until after the record's over?
Yes, and those who...
Because this
those thing, who, those this who want to guess may do so.
This singer is trying his best on this, one of his very first records, to sound like Bing Crosby.
And I'd give him a B+ on that point, but he is a good singer.
Here is the orchestra of Ted Weems, with a few bars whistled by his ever-present whistler, Elmo Tanner, On a Decca record recorded May 15th, 1936, the song is a pleasant little thing called Lazy Weather.
Any weather for me is lazy weather, and this will be good.
And brooks and idle fishing streams. Lazy weather, working ain't no good. Now's the time we should twiddle thumbs and whittle wood. Lazy weather, good for nothing time but joy and love and melody and rhyme. All get together, meet her in the lane. It's lazy weather time
again. Was Lazy Weather by Ted Weems and his orchestra, with Elmo Tanner's whistling and vocal by Perry Como on his very first recorded performance, assuming that any band he performed with before didn't make any records.
Well, that was, yes. Well, he's starting right out of the box. You know, I think he had just gotten out of barber college or something at that point, decided to go into something else. So, you know, I think it was good he did that, too. He seemed to do pretty well at the other.
Oh, yes. Well, now we move to a completely different venue. In 1947, seven casts of seven comedy radio shows were engaged to make records for a small company called Monitor Top 10, pressed by the Apollo Company. And each radio show was engaged to make four records as a set with the picture of the star or the program on the cover in humorous artwork. Jack Benny was one of the people whose programs was recorded this way. And here's one of the sides from that set. Jack Benny in Rochester, with Mel Blanc as Jack's long-suffering violin teacher.
Professor LeBlanc.
And the
yes.
Professor LeBlanc, yep. And so here they all are. This sounds like a radio show, but it was actually made for records and performed in front of a studio audience. So you hear them, too. So here from 1947, Jack Benny with Rochester and Mel Blanc in Getting a Shave.
Rochester, before I go to the studio, I'm expecting Professor LeBlanc, my violin teacher, to come over and give me a lesson. So you better hurry up and shave me.
Yes, sir.
Got everything ready?
Yes, sir. It's all here. Hot water, towel, brush, shaving cream, razor, and plasma.
Good, good. Now make it quick.
Okay. Wait till I get the cap off this new tube of shaving cream.
New tube? What happened to the old tube? There ought to be at least one more shave in it.
But, boss, you've been saying that since 1938.
What?
I didn't mind when you made me run it through the ringer.
Now, look.
And I didn't mind when you asked Don Wilson to sit on it.
Roger.
But when you made me take that tube down to the Union Station and lay it on the track and wait for the super chief, that was going too far.
Well, all right. If you say it's empty, I'll take your word for it. Go ahead, open that new tube.
Do you want me to christen it with a bottle of champagne?
No. Wait a second, Roger. No use opening that shaving cream. Use some of that over there.
This? But, boss, are you sure this stuff is good for shaving?
Certainly. It says so on the box. Does everything. Now, hurry.
Okay, I'll lather up your face. Mmm. Look at that soap foam. Are you still under there, boss?
Yes, and be careful when you use the razor.
Okay, now let me see. Two ears, one nose, one chin.
Two ears, one nose, one chin. Rochester, what are you writing that down for?
After I finish shaving you, I call the roll.
Oh, don't be silly. Now get on with the shave.
All right. I'll put on a little more lather. Come in!
Bonjour, Rochester. Monsieur Benny is expecting me to give him a violin lesson this... Sacre bleu, that looks delicious.
Professor, stop trying to blow the foam off. It's me. Get your foot off my knee. It's not a brass rail.
I am so sorry.
Now, come on, Rochester. Get this over with.
Sit down, Professor. You're next.
And be careful with that razor.
Yes, sir. Mr. Benny, lean way back and lift your chin up. I want to get your neck nice and smooth.
Okay. Rochester, what'd you stop for?
I was just wondering, boss. Do you think this would be a good time for me to ask you for a raise?
No, it wouldn't. Now, take it easy.
Yes, sir.
And as soon as you're through, out! Rochester, you cut me.
It's about time you felt it. I did it a minute ago.
Well, why didn't you tell me?
I was waiting for you to bleed.
Don't be funny. Did you cut me bad?
That's nothing, boss. I just snipped the stem off your Adam's apple.
Clumsy thing. I'll have to buy a collar button. Well, wipe the soap off my face. Thanks. Oh, Professor, I'll go put on a tie, and then I'll come back for my lesson.
Oui, monsieur. Rochester, the cut on Monsieur Benny's throat, is it a bad one?
No, it's not deep at all. And it's all my fault.
No, no, Rochester. It was my fault. I didn't push your hand hard enough.
Rather gruesome ending there, wasn't it?
Oh, I'm afraid so. No, I, you know, when you played that thing for me a while ago, I thought that really was from the radio transcription. But as you say, that's an actual studio recording.
Yes.
Of a sketch that might have been on the Jack Benny Show.
In small type on the label, it reads Audience Records. So that was the actual intent of that division of Apollo Records, to be recording performances like they were radio.
Well, it's a nice job. Unfortunately, the records are... Mm-hmm. I mean, they printed those on Peanut Brittle, too. They stamped those things. You said you picked one up once and it just sort of fell apart in your hands.
We'll be hearing from Mel Blanc again later in the program.
Of course. We'll talk about him when we get to that other record.
Sure.
And that's coming up. Yeah.
And now, again, to show the diversity of the collection, here's some hot jazz, which is actually rather on the hokey side, intentionally so. It's the Kentucky Grasshoppers, which is a small group of musicians fronted by Benny Goodman.
They're basically from the Ben Pollock group.
Some of the jazz musicians out of Pollock's band, I guess.
Of course, you wouldn't know they were jazz musicians by listening to this, but,
they
give it a shot, though.
That's for sure. Here they are doing Shirt Tail Stomp, which is actually a Cod Dixie, as they say. A variation of St. Louis Blues. This was recorded for Banner on March 15th, 1929.
Wow.
And that's
you know,
and that was deliberately bad jazz played by, you know, Benny Goodman and the company.
They were trying to outdo Ted Lewis on that thing.
Well, you know,
I like Ted Lewis's records, by the way, but they're trying to like, take it down a notch even from him. Yeah. Amazing.
And now for a much more serious performance, we have Charles Harrison. Charles Harrison was another Irish-American tenor who made lots and lots of records in the 1920s. Again, he is just a teeny bit out of his normal performing mode here, because although he is singing a love song, the song is Avalon, he's not doing it entirely sedate, because the band behind him is playing a really bouncy background. During the instrumental interlude, they even sound like they're playing jazz, but I can tell from listening to the notes that they're playing that everything they're playing is right on the music chart in front of them.
Well, you know, some people need a road map. But those guys, you know, they were doing a good job with it, though. Mm-hmm. They have to say.
They do a wonderful job on this Victor record from October 1920. Charles Harrison sings Avalon.
Every morning memory stray across the sea where flying fishes lay. And as the night is falling, I find that I'm recalling that blissful all-enthralling day. I found my love in Avalon beside the bay. I left my love in Avalon and sailed away. Her, close to my heart I press her, upon that golden yesterday.
Giving it a nice dramatic reading with a nice bouncy background.
Well, it was a nice, it was a good tempo for that, actually.
And now, it's time to play another record and find out whether or not you, the listeners, can determine who the singer is.
Yes, this is a good one, by the way. This will keep you guessing.
All I will say about it is this. It's a primary example of one part of my collection, which I call personality records. By personality records, my narrow definition of it does not include such personalities as Al Jolson, Eddie Cantor, Sophie Tucker, Jimmy Durante, because they made a lot of their record, a lot of records, and they made a lot of their income from the royalties of those records. That's not to disparage them. I collect the records of those people. But because they made so many, I consider their records either vaudeville or early pop, depending on when they were made. To me, a true personality record, in quotes, is one that was made by someone who was famous in any other field, including other branches of show business, who did not ordinarily make records. This would include politicians, authors, poets, and vaudeville stars, and so forth.
People who didn't normally get into the studio to record, but who were extremely well known in their day, very very popular in their day.
Exactly.
And this is Radiola, and I'm here with Walt Mitchell, and we're about to hear something amazing. So continue.
So here from Cameo Records, in May of 1923, our mystery singer sings one of the great comedy songs of the year, I Love Me, and he does it deadpan. Here it is.
I always wanted that to be my theme song.
When people write their songs of love, they write of one another. It's always this, a ma, a pa, a sweetheart, or a brother. But love songs that they've aimed at me have all gone on the shelf. I don't think that is fair, so now I'll write one of myself. I love me, I love me, I love myself to death. I love me, till I'm all out of breath. I stop at every slot machine that I should chance to pass, and give myself a hug and squeeze as I look in the glass. I love me, I'm wild about sweet me. I love me, only me, so I'm content, you see. I like myself with such delight, I take me right straight home each night, and sleep with me till broad daylight. I'm wild about myself. I love me, every place I go. I love me, and at a movie show, I take myself right by my arm, push me through the crowd, and listen to myself read me the titles right out loud. I love me, I love to squeeze my hand. I love me, it always feels so grand. With me, I get right in my tub, I let myself give me a rub. Oh, how I love to feel me scrub, I'm wild about myself. I love me, I'm wild about myself. I love me, my picture's on my shelf. You may not think I look so good, but me thinks I'm just fine. It's grand when I look in my eyes and know that I'm all mine. I love me, and my love doesn't bore. Day by day, in every way, I love me more and more. I take me to a quiet place, I put my arm around my waist. If me gets fresh, I slap my face, I'm wild about myself.
Good old Jack Haley, the Tin Man from the Wizard of Oz, as he would be known later on, singing "I Love Me" in 1923.
Now that's some real self-esteem there.
Oh yes.
Yes, definitely. Oh. A lot of self-esteem in that record.
Oh, I love it kids egotists to the hilt, and I love it.
Well, you know, some of them need kidding. Other people, you know, they probably think, oh yeah, that's fine. That's my song. That's okay. There's a lot of that. That's an occupational hazard in radio, by the way.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, now we turn to Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians performing a song you wouldn't think you would find on a record by Guy Lombardo. But this song was very popular in 1933-34, so a number of the dance bands recorded their versions of it as well. It's Jimmy Durante's theme song, Inka Dinka Doo, recorded November 27th, 1933 for Brunswick Records, and featuring the ever-present Lombardo Trio and wonderful work by the dual piano pianists.
Everybody wants to get into the act. Here they go.
Got the whole world spooning. Eskimo bells up in Iceland are ringing. They made their own paradise land singing. Ink a dink a doo, a dink a dee, a dink a doo simply means ink. A dink a dee, a dink a doo. Thank you.
Lombardo and Company with Inca Dinka Doo. I was very glad to find, again, a near-perfect copy of that record.
That sounds beautiful.
It's good musicianship, and Durandy did a wonderful job composing that melody.
I'd have to say it is. It's a lovely song, although I don't know how many Eskimos are actually up in Iceland. I know you might have a problem with... I mean, it's just sort of, but, you know, the work, it works in the lyric, though. It really does.
Yeah, it fits. It fits. And now we have the Hayden Quartet, which, again, like the Peerless Quartet, normally sang much more serious songs. But here, they really went to town as they sang a song which they recorded for Victor in 1908, which... Everybody, not just record collectors, everybody knows.
They do. Even you know this. I mean, I know. I mean, I'm not talking you, Walt, but even the song, you people out there know this song even without knowing it because it's that popular.
The only thing most people don't know is that in addition to the part that everybody knows, there are also two verses leading up to the famous chorus, and those are sung for us now as we hear in its entirety. The Hayden Quartet, featuring lead singer Harry McDonough, singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Casey was baseball mad, had the fever and had it bad. Just to root for the hometown crew, every school, Katie Blue. On a Saturday, her young foe called to see if she'd like to go to see a show. But Miss Kate said, no, I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Oh, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Oh, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the whole team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Casey saw all the game, knew the players by their first name. Told the umpire he was wrong all along, good and strong. When the score was just 2-2, Casey knew what to do. So just to cheer up the boys she knew, she made the gang sing this song. Take me out to the ball game, take me out with the crowd. Oh, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the whole team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Well, baseball season may be over, but that record is still with us.
I think maybe it'll make people think of warmer weather as we drift into the snowdrift season. Billy Murray should have been on that record. He really should have been on that.
Billy loved baseball so much so that he, on his days off, he would suit up and play with the local ball team in New York.
Amazing, But that really is a Billy Murray song. It's astonishing that he never recorded that, at least in the acoustic era.
Yeah, it is indeed astonishing. Well, to close out the second hour, I promised that Mel Blanc would be back, and he is.
Let's talk about Mel Blanc a minute. Now, Mel Blanc is somebody, he was a friend of yours. You got to know him in the late 70s.
I wrote a column in the Showbiz History magazine, The World of Yesterday, in the mid to late 70s. And The column itself was also called From Horn and Mike.
Well, that's why I'm calling this episode of Radiola, Horn and Mike. And, of course, if anybody has me on, they can call their episode Radiola so we can get everybody confused. But this is a Horn and Mike episode. And, of course, Walt Mitchell hosted that show until 1985, as you say. So continue about your...
Had been writing this column usually... about the records of one of these personalities. The first one I did was on the records of Mae West, who, of course, didn't make very many records. It got to the point where it was now 1978. I learned that Mel Blanc was coming to Syracuse to do one of his college talks, which he was doing around the country, one at a time, not as a tour or anything. So I had not yet written him a column about the records of Mel Blanc, so I contacted my editors and I said, I may have a chance to get an interview with Mel Blanc. Would you like that for the magazine? They said, if you can get an interview with Mel Blanc, you can take up as much space in the magazine as you wanted.
I love it when editors say that.
Oh, I love it. I love it too.
Yes, isn't it great? You know, believe me, I like to ramble.
I got the interview with Mary Lou present. She took pictures and also asked questions.
That's Mary Lou Wallace, who later did the radio show with you. And
that's right.
Yes. Hi, Mary Lou. I'm sure she's listening to this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I found out that it was very easy for us to get the interview with Mel by writing to him in California in advance of his appearance in Syracuse. On April 20th, 1978, in the evening, Mary Lou and I went to the hotel room where he was staying, and we didn't know what to expect because we didn't really know the man personally or privately, but we needn't have worried because within 5 minutes of our entering that hotel room, it was like we were old friends. He was very kind, very open, very friendly. And after we visited some and got the records autographed that I wanted to get signed, then we settled down for the formal interview, which I had written out as about 20 questions or so. The whole evening went wonderfully, and altogether we were with him for 2.25 hours, during which time he never once gave us the impression that he thought he was doing us a grand favor, which in fact he was. So the result of that was a 50-page article in the magazine, including my column.
50 pages?
Including my regular record column, plus the cover story of all the rest of his career. I couldn't tell his whole story in a magazine.
But you just about did in 50 pages. Well, there's a lot there.
Well, I could touch on the different aspects of his career. That was the problem. I'd seen short magazine and newspaper articles over the years about Mel, but it was usually just a brief thing about one aspect of his career or another. Nobody I knew had tried to put it all together in one place. So being able to go into one aspect of his career or another, talk about his work on radio, his work in cartoons, work on records and so forth, and television, working with Jack Benny, I was able to, in a condensed way, cover his entire life. And that was what I wanted to do up to his entire life, of course, up to that point, including talking about his current activities. So I sent the magazine off to him, and I later learned from my editors that he had written to them and asked for 2 more copies, and he paid for them. He sent them $4 for the extra issues. In 1980, Mary Lou and I made our first joint trip to Hollywood together, to go to the Laurel and Hardy Fans Convention. We connected with Mel while we were out there, and we remained close friends with him during his last 11 years.
That's wonderful. It's wonderful you got to know him, because he was such a great man. He was a wonderful guy.
If you ever saw him interviewed on television, he wasn't that very kind fellow that you saw being talked to. He was twice as nice. He was absolutely spectacular. If he got to know you and liked you, he'd do almost anything for you, up to and including risking his own health. He did that for me one time, and I found out about it 2 days after the fact. By this time, I knew him well enough so that I could actually chastise the great man. I said, Mel, why did you go against your doctor's orders like that? He replied, well, you came so far to see me and made an exception in your case. But risking your health is your health is more than anybody should expect from a friend.
Well, we have Mel Blanc's friend and my friend, Walt Mitchell, here on this edition of Radiola. And now, and I'm Andy Sr., by the way, not that it matters, but I am. And so tell us about what we're going to hear now.
Well, this is one of Mel's novelty records. In addition to all those children's records he made for Capitol in the 40s and 50s, he also recorded a number of comedy novelty records intended for the adult market. And this is one of those. From February 26, 1952, here is Mel Blanc accompanied by Franklin Marx and his brothers, little play on the Marx brothers.
Oh, there, yes.
Singing the song Morris.
You do that well.
There's a killer diller wrestler, he's as rough as he can be. He can mangle anyone from here to Kankakee. And what do you think his name is? What do you think his name is?
Morris.
Morris?
There's a movie star in Hollywood as handsome as can be. Women look at him and faint away in ecstasy. And what do you think his name is? What do you think his name is?
Morris.
Morris?
It used to be that every other fellow's name was Joe. But now you hear a new name everywhere you go.
The fellas laughed at Oscar for the funny name he had. And so he changed his name to one that didn't seem so bad. Now what do you think his name is? What do you think his name is?
Morris.
Morris!
Now the other day they brought a big gorilla to the zoo. They had to find a name to suit a monster 10'2". So what do you think his name is? What do you think his name is?
Morris.
Morris?
It used to be that every other fellow's name was Joe. But now you hear a new name everywhere you go.
All the fellas laughed at Hubert for the funny name he had. And so he changed his name to one that didn't seem so bad.
Now what do you think his name is? What do you think his name is?
Morris.
Morris?
I've always said to have a son would be my greatest joy. And then at last the stork sent down an 8-pound baby boy. Now what do you think his name is? What do you think his name is? Melvin.
Melvin!